is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Do you have a handle on Baroque music? If not, no worries. We'll learn more about it later in the show as we talk with Sunday Baroque's Suzanne Bona and Cincinnati Public Radio's Jessica Laurie. First up this afternoon, between 1940 and 1945, approximately 1.3 million men, women, and children, most of whom were Jewish, were deported to Auschwitz. Before the concentration camp was finally liberated by Soviet forces on January 27, 1945, 1.1 million had perished there. The Soviet troops found only 7,000 survivors. A new exhibit marking the 70th anniversary of the camp's liberation, Unlocking the Gates of Auschwitz 70 years later, opens January 30th at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Joining us this afternoon are Werner Koppel, a survivor of Auschwitz, Sarah Weiss, Executive Director of the Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education, and Dr. C.G. Newsom, President of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And thanks, everybody, for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Sarah, tell me about the origins of Auschwitz. Now, this started, it was a camp of a certain size when it started, and the Nazis just kept expanding it more and more until it was a huge place.
Correct. Auschwitz is over 50 square miles. It encompasses 30 camps and subcamps. So, you know, Auschwitz we know is synonymous with the Holocaust. However, what we don't realize is the enormity, the breadth of what that universe was, a universe apart from our own and defying a language that we can even understand.
You say that Auschwitz has become synonymous with the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Talk about that some more. How so?
I think because of the enormity of the factory of death that was Auschwitz and that 1.1 million, it had the highest amount of murders in its gas chambers, but also a great number survived Auschwitz because, as I mentioned, there were 30 subcamps. So there were slave labor factories. Werner was in one of the slave labor areas of the camp. There were other aspects. So people were deported there and then sent elsewhere. So we also have a lot of survivors. A lot is relative. But of those who survived the Holocaust, many went through at some point the gates of Auschwitz. And therefore, we hear that and we hear what happened there. And it is something that resonates, I think, as a symbol of the inhumanity, the destruction that was the Holocaust.
And if I understand correctly, Sarah, there was a business that actually used the slave labor and profited off of that, wasn't there?
Many businesses. And Werner could really speak more to I.G. Farben and his work he did in Buna that was benefiting that I.G. Farben company.
Werner, I can't even begin to imagine what life was like being a prisoner in Auschwitz and what you went through. How would you describe Auschwitz and what life was like there?
Well, the life was very very difficult, but we were so being numb, hungry constantly, that our normal... When you were thinking about where's the next garbage can to find something to eat, that was the main thing. I personally was somewhat lucky when we arrived with a transport from Berlin on April the 20th, 1943. We were 100 young kids, 100 boys. We were assigned to a detail, put cables into the ground. And less than 2 weeks later, some old prisoner who was already in concentration camps in 38, a Jewish fellow from Vienna, was made to be a capo. And he tapped me on my shoulder and he said, give me all your numbers and I have you transferred into a fine mechanic. And that way we went into a fine mechanic workshop.
Now, you were 8 years old in 1933 when the Nazi Party took over the German government. What changes did you and other Jews see when they took over?
Well, within days, we saw brown shirts in front of Jewish stores. In 34, we were not allowed anymore to go to public schools. So this little Jewish community organized a parochial school, and we walked to school, 20 minutes walk. We would pass a store. We would pass a playground. We would pass a park entrance, and all these places would have signs on Jews and dogs prohibited. Jews stay out. Jews die in the gutter. In 35, I went with my parents. We had to go to get a letter J marked our ID card with J represents Jude or Jew. In 38, with Kristallnacht, we were given an extra name, so I was born an Israel couple. Every female had to add Sarah. In 41, we had to get the yellow Star of David carrying, be put on the outer garment. So there was a lot of discrimination. And even on the street level, we could hardly could walk on the sidewalk. So we were prepared when the real bad stuff started.
You had to get a tattoo, an identifying tattoo as well, didn't you?
Well, when we arrived at Auschwitz, the train arrived from Berlin. The door in Birkenau, actually Auschwitz too. The doors opened up, a lot of commotion, dogs, whips, and the first comment we heard was "women and children to the left." The transport I arrived with were approximately 1,200 people. Of the 1,200, about 575 women, children, old folks were right then gassed and burned. We young kids, young boys, were put on a truck, taken to a campsite. At campsite, we had to undress. The only two items we were allowed to keep was our belts and our shoes. We were shaven over all our bodies. And after that, we were chased through a shower, taken across the street in another barrack, and there we were registered as prisoners, and the prison number was tattooed on left arm. That was it.
Wow, I can't even begin to imagine what that was like. CG, there's an exhibit that is going to open at the Freedom Center called "Unlocking the Gates of Auschwitz 70 Years Later," and this actually tells the history of the Holocaust from several different perspectives, doesn't it?
It does. I've been able to get a bit of a preview, so I just have to encourage everybody to come out and see this exhibit. It's probably the best exhibit on the Holocaust west of Washington, D.C. for the time that it's up. It, you know, is a wonderful presentation of the horrors of that moment, the tragedy of that moment, but also the triumph. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the person of Warner, we got a sense of how there is a victorious side of this story that we need to celebrate, and celebrate in a way that we never will let that happen again, and celebrate it in the way that we can draw inspiration for how we can live better together as human beings.
Now, the exhibit was actually developed by the Freedom Center in partnership with several...
Okay. CHHE. And, okay. So now let's give credit where credit is due. So, Sarah, you should speak to that. We were pleased to be able to partner with them. We had been talking about ways to join forces.
Sarah, what went into developing this?
A lot went into developing, and it's certainly been a partnership. So it was the initiative of the Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education wanting to mark this 70th anniversary in a very special way. And we reached out to both the Freedom Center and the Cincinnati Museum Center, who with open arms wanted to participate and partner in this, bring together collections of rare artifacts, documents, photographs, the video testimonies of Warner Koppel and Bella Uziel, an Auschwitz survivor from Greece. One of the collections, there's a variety of collections of artifacts that are included in the exhibition. One is Stephen F. Cassidy collection, which is a local collector who has one of the largest private collections of Holocaust-related items. And there's some very rare documents, artifacts that will be on display as well. So about 130 artifacts and documents, photographs, videos. It'll be very interactive and inspirational throughout.
How long is the exhibit going to run?
What is the end time, Sarah?
The end date is May 26th, mm-hmm. So January 30th through May 26th at the Freedom Center. And we're thrilled to be in this incredible partnership in which I think the messages of both institutions are very similar, and we can share that through this exhibition.
And if demand is great enough, who knows, we might be able to work something out for a longer run.
Warner, you were actually separated from your family in 1941. Was that a common tactic that the Nazis used to break up families?
No, I had left my home of my parents in 1940 to join a training center to be prepared to go to Palestine as a pioneer to build a home for the Jewish people.
Okay.
And then in 1941, I was notified the deportation started in fall of 1941, and I was notified that the Jews from the little town I came from were ready to be deported, and I asked for permission to go home, which was granted, and come home. I was asked for permission to be sent out with them, was denied, and I said goodbye to my parents and younger brother in the first week of December 1941, never to see him, ever hear from him again.
Oh, my gosh. How old were you when you ended up in Auschwitz?
17.
17 years old.
When it was over, I was 19.
Okay. And amid all this horror, was there ever any hope that you saw? Were there people who might have encouraged you in there? Was that something that people tried to do to survive, to encourage each other? And
well, we were a group of youngsters, and we helped himself. Our teacher from 1940 was with us, and so we never give in. But there's also another thing happened, which is not very well known, that in 1944, when the company IG Farben, who we were do the slave labor for, their plant was ready to produce goods, and a huge plant. And when it was ready, we saw two planes flying from left to right, and we didn't know who they were. 6 weeks later, 250 B-25s, the largest plane belonging to the United States 15th Army Air Corps, flying out of Italy, carpet bombed the factory of IG Farben at Auschwitz. And we were not allowed to go into the shelter.
Oh, wow.
I'm not going to any fireworks.
I can't say I blame you, Warner. We will continue our conversation about Auschwitz and the Holocaust after the break, and you can join in at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. This week is WVXU and WMUB's Winter Fun Drive. If you've never given before, take that first step right now by becoming a member. Individual contributions from listeners like you keep the news and information you depend on every day on the air. You can give online at WVXU.org or WMUB.org or by calling 513-419-7155. My guests this afternoon are Warner Koppel, a survivor of Auschwitz, and Sarah Weiss, Executive Director of the Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education. Also, C.G. Newsom, who's the president of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number to call, 513-419-7100. January 27th is going to mark the 70th anniversary of the liberation of those being held in the Nazi extermination camp Auschwitz. And a new exhibit about Auschwitz opens a week from today at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. And Sarah, what kinds of experiences, what kinds of things, what kinds of stories can people get from that exhibit?
So there will be a variety of ways in which the history and experience and universe that was Auschwitz will be portrayed in the exhibition. So, for example, when visitors are coming in, they'll actually get the opportunity through video testimony to meet Warner Koppel and Bella Uziel, survivors of Auschwitz, who will really be the guides through the exhibit, through their experiences. But along the way, they'll see photographs, be challenged by some of the history artifacts, such as children's books that were printed by the Nazis that were served as propaganda. It was actually anti-Semitic children's books that were used in kindergartens throughout Germany. Stars from various countries that were used to identify Jews. One artifact that I think is very special is the money, the Auschwitz money that was in Warner's pocket when he escaped the death march in 1945 and happened to realize he had money. He couldn't really buy anything with this money, but that will be on display. We have a prison uniform of a local survivor, Leo Willick, who survived both Dachau and Auschwitz, and many, many others. As I mentioned, about 130 rare artifacts will be on display from collections, including the Stephen F. Cassidy collection, the Holocaust Center's collection, also from the American Jewish Archives and Clow Library at Hebrew Union College. So it's a wonderful coming together of treasures in our own community showcasing this history.
I think what stood out in my mind when I kind of walked through a little bit yesterday is they were still working on the exhibit, were the shoes lined with human hair, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's gripping.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also saw that Haggadah.
You
want to tell the story about that Haggadah?
Well, when I returned to Berlin, when the war was over, we all had to return to country of origin. People somewhere during the war were burying a lot of Jewish artifacts, religious artifacts. And a rabbi who was married to a lady Jewish by choice was not deported because the wife was considered Aryan. And they tipped us off to dig out all the artifacts. And among this was the Haggadah, and we used it, or I used it, in the first Seder of 1946 in a home for the Jewish aged, where about 40 or 50 old folks survived Terezin, and they were coming back to Berlin in the home for the Jewish aged. And I kept it, and I gave it to the center.
This was saved by a rabbi who understood that these items of Judaica of significance and importance were being destroyed to ensure that Judaism could live on if anyone survived.
That rabbi was one of those rays of hope, right?
Yes.
Well, yeah, he was also the one who married us, and we were the first Jewish wedding after the war in Berlin.
Oh.
We're talking about hope.
Warner, shortly before the Soviets liberated Auschwitz in January 1945, you were actually able to escape, weren't you? How did that come about?
Let me say this to you. What I consider the beginning of the end was the 18th of January 1945, when over 100,000 prisoners of Auschwitz complex had to march out in blocks of 1,000. And the so-called death march, which people can read up in the book Night, written by Elie Wiesel. And when I ran away from the death march, hiding in the woods for several days, and the eastern front came closer, we heard shooting ahead of us. And one of my friends next to me said, let me go forward to see what's going on. He came back, he said, don't worry about it. They're not liquidating us. They're only shooting at the one escaping. And I gave a look and didn't see a guard. And instinctively, I started running and ran into the woods. And we were hiding in the woods. And when we knew the front had rolled over us, we worked ourselves to the edge of the woods. We saw a lone farmhouse, English spoken, BBC London on the radio had news in different languages. And when it came to the German language, they were announcing that the Soviets had found Auschwitz. And then two or three days later, we saw the first tank. It was a Russian tank. And my luck is the officer was a Jew who spoke Yiddish, and I spoke German, and we could communicate.
That's incredible. 513-419-7100 to join our conversation. And
great story.
Let's talk with Melanie in White Oak. Good afternoon, Melanie. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that Werner was the first person that introduced me to the Holocaust. He came in and did a first-person speech with us, I think in 2002 at Mount St. Joe. And he is the entire reason I have been studying the Holocaust now since 2002 all by myself. I've also been to CHHG. It's a great organization. And, Sarah, you're an amazing person, too.
And Melanie, thank you for your call. I started to say I know who that is.
Yes, I was very excited to hear it on the radio, and I can't wait to make it there on the 30th. I'm going to take the day off of work and go down there.
Wow.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, lady.
Melanie, thank you so much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation. Werner, how did you eventually get to America?
We had to return to Germany, to Berlin. And in Berlin, you know, there were four sectors, four powers. And we found out that the United States Congress in 1940, early 1946, had passed a law to let in 250,000 displaced persons from Europe, because there were not only Jews and but POWs, and some of them were collaborators from East Germany, East Europe. And we applied for this, and we came to America as displaced person. And I don't want to go into the whole trip because it took forever. But let me say one thing to you. We traveled across the ocean on a United States World War II troop transport, the General McRae. And when that ship arrived in New York at August morning, very early, dense fog, and the Statue of Liberty came out, that made you a feeling you had really be in a place and has left hate and prejudice on the blood-soaked earth of Germany.
Mm. You had to be ecstatic to get
wonderful.
Here.
Wonderful. Unreal.
Now, how did you get on with your life after going through so many horrible things?
To be honest with you, I was very hateful. And as I mentioned, I met a wonderful girl. We were the first wedding, Jewish wedding in Berlin. We had a baby in 1948. It was a four-year period before we actually could leave. And when I saw that baby in a crib, not even in a crib, it was being brought out in the arms of a nun, I knew I had to change. But having said this, it's still with us. And I will always, let me use the words of my grandson, not my words. Stand up against hate and prejudice, even if it does not affect you.
So that's the lesson that people should learn from what happened in Germany 70 years ago.
Absolutely.
Sarah, why is it important to remember the history of Auschwitz and the Holocaust today? What makes it relevant?
I think you can look in our own city and our state and our country and our world and unfortunately see discrimination, whether it's racism, anti-Semitism, of a variety of groups of people. And I think, you know, as Warner started out, it started with small actions. It started with hate speech. It started with discrimination and led to greater violence and horrific conditions. And so it's important that we stop things, that we speak up, that we listen to Warner's grandson's words and stand up to hate and prejudice. I think it's still with us, unfortunately. And so perhaps by reflecting on the history, we can think about how we act and treat each other today.
Yeah. I think it's so very important that we're able to host this exhibit at the Freedom Center because it's a universal story. Mm-hmm. It's a story with universal lessons for all of us to learn in real time right now.
What are those lessons?
Well, it's the lesson that hate doesn't do anything but bring destruction, and that love can cure, and that forgiveness can open a way to a better future for us all, and that ethnicity and race and all of that kind of stuff really are superficial kind of considerations when it comes to the real meat and potatoes of what it means for people to recognize people as human beings and get on with life.
Sarah, do you happen to know how many Holocaust survivors are still around locally and how their stories are being preserved?
So this would be a guesstimate, but my guess would be there are still a couple hundred Holocaust survivors in our greater Cincinnati community, those who came over as refugees or came over, were hidden children. We have very few Auschwitz survivors still living in our community. Their stories, the stories have been preserved from the time of the Shoah Foundation. The Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education is still preserving stories, documents, testimonies, and our hope is to ensure that these stories are told for many years to come.
And CG, if people want to get more information about the exhibit, where can they go for that?
Well, they can call our front desk, but they can go online to our website, and they will see the information about the times that we're open, how to come get a ticket, and so forth and so on.
Okay, and we'll have a link to that website at wvxu.org. Warner, does it, when you look back on all this, does it seem like a dream, or is it still very real and present to you what happened?
It is real. It is present. You feel it when you hear many stories. You feel it when you hear remarks. It is with us, and it has to be fought.
Mm-hmm. And it never goes away, does it?
No.
Well, thank you so very much. Warner, Sarah, and CG, Thank you for joining me this afternoon. Warner Koppel is a survivor of Auschwitz. Sarah Weiss is Executive Director of the Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education. And Dr. C.G. Newsom is President of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. After the break, we'll have a conversation with the creator and host of Sunday Baroque and WGUC's music director about the history and impact of Baroque music. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.